Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, August 24th, 2001. In the fireside room this evening is a forum led by Norm Day. Today's session number is FO2001-17 and it's entitled Holden Mine Cleanup. Let's listen in.
Operations Manager, I'd like to welcome you tonight to our forum. This weekend, the Holden Village Science and Technology Committee is also meeting. And oftentimes, this committee will sponsor a forum. But we didn't want to miss the chance to, since Norm Day is in the village, to have an update on the mine remediation. So we're doing that tonight. But we also want to take a minute to talk a little bit about the Science and Technology Committee. I'd like to introduce Kurt Anderson, who is the chair of the Science and Technology Committee.
Thanks, Christopher. I just wanted to give you a brief introduction of the Science and Technology Committee. We're a group of volunteers that assist Christopher and others in the village management on primarily infrastructure and operations needs. And there's a number of challenges that we mull over and hopefully assist with. The mine restoration and the potential impacts to the village is one. Some of the others are the water system, septic system, all the things that keep the village running and going on a day-to-day basis. And we meet, again, we're a group of volunteers, and we meet twice a year, once in the summer, and that happens to be this weekend, and then once in the winter at PLU. We started our meetings this afternoon, and we'll be reconvening tomorrow at 8:30, and I just wanted to extend an invitation to any of you that would like to sit in on all or part of the meeting tomorrow. Anyone is welcome. It's open to everyone, and we would love to have you there. So I just wanted to let you know that we are meeting, and you're welcome. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Kurt. Now, I'd like to introduce Norm Day. And Norm is the Forest Service Project Manager for the Holden Mine Remediation Project. And that has brought Norm to the village a lot in the last couple of years. Sometimes we feel like he's on our staff because he's here so much. And Norm has been extremely generous in his time to present forums like this to the community throughout the last couple of years, and he's also a great supporter of the village and a very interesting speaker, and he's become very accomplished at PowerPoint presentation. So I'd like to introduce Norm and to thank you very much for coming and speaking to us.
Until the technology catches up with me and it doesn't work.
We got the Science and Technology.
That's right. Well, it's a pleasure to be here this evening and talk to the group. I know some of you have heard several of my forums, so some of this material may be old to you. Maybe it's just going to be refresh your memory on what the status of the project is. Christopher asked me to do several things tonight in the presentation, so I had to spend the afternoon putting an entirely new presentation together. I kind of took parts of two ones I already had developed and added a new middle section to it, so I don't know how long it's going to last. So usually I get a chance to kind of dry run it a little bit, but tonight I don't know. What I'm going to do is first kind of give you an overview of the cleanup project, why we're doing the cleanup project, who's doing it, who's involved, and give you a little bit about our time schedule for completing the project. Just within the last several months, we have the agencies have reached agreement with the responsible company as to the general themes of the alternatives for the remediation. We haven't reached agreement yet on the exact description or makeup of each of the alternatives. We're still in a negotiation process on that, but there's at least enough out on the table that I can kind of go over in general what these alternatives will look like. And then I'm going to finish up with a number of pictures I took last fall and this spring inside the mine. We entered the mine last year. We opened up the cave portal, got access to the 1500 level. We've been up in the 300 and 1100 levels last year doing some bad investigation work and doing some sampling up there as well of the water quality. So I'll have some pictures of what the mine looks like today, and then I've come across a number of old pictures of the mine when it was operating, and I've had those made into digital images, and I'll show you what scenes from the same place when the mine was operating and what it looks like today. So I don't know how long this is going to last, and I would appreciate it if you could hold your questions to the end, because otherwise it may really go on for a while. Unless you have something burning, you just can't wait to get answered. And I think what might work best for me is if I get this thing started, I'm going to go back there on the chair, and I would use the pointer and point things out. It's kind of hard to do that from up here. Okay.
Oh. Woo! Norm!
Whoa. Now, if I can find my way back to my... Sure, if I can...
Sure.
Of course, most of you know where you're at. You're holding mine, but it's about 40 miles up Lake Chelan, and the site is surrounded by the Glacier Peak Wilderness. Here's Holden Village, and of course, it's 12 miles up Railroad Creek from Lake Chelan. I'm going to go over this rather quick so I can make sure I get through in time. Hopefully not too quick. One other thing that I should have mentioned earlier is that you'll see in the material on the slides I use a lot of acronyms. And that's because it takes up less space on the slides, so I'm going to have to try to define those for you as I get to them. House Sound Mining Company, of course, operated the mine for 20 years, from 1937 to 1957. And during that time, produced $66 million worth of copper, zinc, silver, and gold. If you were to calculate the value of the metals removed in today's metal prices, it would come out to $330 million. During the operation, about 57, 58 miles of underground mine workings were developed in the hill across from us. And the ore all came out of the 1500 level right here, which is what they call the third level around here, where the top of the waste dumps. And then went into the mill, went through the mill and came out and was loaded onto trucks and hauled down to Lucerne, where it was put on barge and then sent to Chelan, offloaded on trucks and then loaded onto railroad cars right at Chelan and shipped to the Tacoma smelter. But anyway, the ore body dips steeply to the southwest. As you can see, it averages about 75 feet thick. Some places it's 100 feet thick of massive sulfides containing copper, zinc, gold, and silver, primarily. The mine was developed above the 1500 level. Everything came down to the 1500 level and came out. On the levels below the mine, everything had to come up by the shaft and then out on the 1500 level. They used stoping here of the vein to remove the ore, using gravity wherever they could to help move the ore and also to help break it up into smaller chunks, which in the end saved money. We had about 1,000 feet or about 1,500 feet of development above the haulage adit. This is called the 1,500 level, and it's measured 1,500 feet down from the discovery point. So the discovery point where this ore body crops out on the surface or the side of the mountain is 1,500 feet above the third level. And you can see the outcrop up there if you know where you're looking. During the mining days, the ore body was mined to, in some places, within 30 feet of the surface. All the ore was removed. Several of the levels up there come out to the surface, as you can see on this diagram, and were developed during the early years when the mine was still under development in the early 1900s, right up to the time the mine was put into production. There's another approximately 1,000 feet of development below the 1,500 level, down to the 2,500 level. And in those lower levels, they actually had crushers in the some of the levels below and crushed the ore before they hauled it up to the surface. As a result of the mining and milling, about 8.5 million tons of mill tailings were placed on the surface of the National Forest System lands along Railroad Creek into three piles. This is tailings pile one, tailings pile two, and tailings pile three. They cover about 90 acres. The tailings pile two right here is the tallest. It's about 120 feet above the creek bed. Also several large waste rock piles, and right about where I'm pointing now is where the main portal is, the 1500 level. And these are the two large waste dumps. And the mill building, what's left of it, sits right in here. There's also several other waste dumps further on up the hillside. These are some of the earlier workings that were developed when Holden and others had the property. All total, there's about 120 acres of disturbance. After the mine shut down in 1957, the mining interests were eventually deeded to the Lutheran Bible Institute, and Holden Village was incorporated in 1962. And you all know the story since then. Since the 1960s, though, the Forest Service and other agencies have studied the impacts associated with the Holden Mine off and on, and it was apparent early on that there were some significant problems out at the Holden Mine. But the Forest Service never had any funding, or at least not enough funding, to really do anything about it until the late 1980s, when the Department of Agriculture developed a special fund called the Hazmat Fund for some of these, for cleaning up many of the hazardous substances sites on National Forest and on other Department of Agriculture lands. And it wasn't only mining. As a matter of fact, most sites were not mining sites, but we were able to tap into the funding, and we did a kind of a limited or an interim action from 1989 to 1992. That interim action consisted of, one, reducing erosion of the tailings piles by installing stream bank protection. The left picture here is what this same view looked like before we did it. And you can see the wood cribbing that was used to keep the tailings in place when they were initially placed there have rotted away. It was very easy for Railroad Creek to erode the tailings and carry it on down to Lake Chelan. Also, because of the steepness, well, I'll get into that one next, but the interim action, we put riprap, large boulders, along the toe of the tailings pile to provide that stability and to keep the water from eroding the toe of the tailings piles. Also, in the spring, when the snow melted, you'd end up with large ponds on the top of the tailings piles, and they'd eventually would evaporate. They'd also sink down into the tailings. And that was a concern, because if the tailings became saturated with water, there is a possibility with those steep faces that you could have a mass failure and the tailings would just slide right out into Rubber Creek. Or if you had an earthquake event, you could get liquefaction of the tailings. So as part of the interim action, we graded drainage ditches on the surface of the tailings, and then lined them and put some boulders in there. And this was done in an effort to get the water off the tailings pile as quickly as we could when the snow melted. Also, if any of you have been here before we put the gravel on the tailings piles, you could get some pretty nasty dust storms here when the tailings did dry out. And while the tailings themselves are not harmful, they certainly could cause breathing and respiration problems when they're blowing around like this. So as part of the interim action, and probably the most expensive part of it, we put about a 6-inch lift of gravel over the top of all the tailings piles. And And then we established some what we call soil islands. They're just patches scattered throughout these tailings piles where we, in addition to the gravel, we put soil material and actually got some trees and shrubs started. And you can see these are some of these soil islands scattered out there. They got a pretty good growth of vegetation already. Now some of that was initially planted and a lot of it has just come in naturally now since this was originally planted almost 10 years ago now. So you can kind of see the before and the after. So the intermaction certainly improved site conditions, but it didn't solve the potential threats to human health and the environment. And those risks include the leaching or movement of contaminants from the mine, the waste rock piles, tailings piles, and elsewhere. Primarily, I'm talking about contaminated water coming out of the mine and then seeps underneath the tailings piles. And all of this degrades the water quality and has a tremendous effect on the fisheries and railroad creek. In addition, we're getting cementation or solidification of the creek bed in Railroad Creek, and that further reduces the aquatic habitat and fisheries. And what happens, you can see the rust-colored water coming out from underneath tailings pile here. You can see all the iron staining in Railroad Creek. Well, as the iron comes out and is dropped out, precipitated out, it actually cements the gravel in the stream bed. And just like concrete. And if you were to go across the bridge up there, the footpath bridge, and down walk down along tailings pile one and get over on the creek side, you can see some of this, what we call ferrocrete. It's about a foot thick. And right in here, it seems to be in the process of forming right now. And this has a habit of just making, you know, the stream bed like concrete and doesn't allow the aquatic macroinvertebrates that the fish eat to survive. So that's one of the reasons why you don't have very many fish in this stretch of the creek. Also, you're having heavy metals introduced to the creek also from some of the mine drainages. There remained a potential for erosion of tailings in the Railroad Creek and a mass failure. You can see this is tailings pile two. And it's 120 feet high and it's very steep. And it wouldn't take much to trigger a small failure or even a large failure. With all the work that we've done, there's still a potential. So that kind of leads you up to what started the current study. And several things contributed to us being able to move forward with a much more aggressive cleanup program. One, we found out through some litigation in Idaho that Howe Sound Mining Company, the company that mined this property, had a successor. And we started negotiations with that successor of Howe Sound in 1996, we kind of started preliminary discussions. And by 1997, the Forest Service, EPA, and Washington Department of Ecology began serious discussions with the PRP, and that's the potentially responsible party, or the liable party, under CERCLA, and that's basically the Superfund Act. And MATCA is the state of Washington's equivalent to the federal Superfund Act called the Model Toxics Control Act. So I would never have room on that slide to write all that out. But anyway, under the authority of Superfund Act and MATCA, we began these serious discussions with the successor to Howe Sound. And that successor today, their name is Intalco. And under the Superfund Act, they are responsible, they are liable and responsible for cleaning these sites up if there's a release of a hazardous substance, and there is at this site. So through a long period of negotiations, we entered into an AOC, or what we really is called an administrator order on consent in 1998, and that directs Intalco to perform a detailed site characterization study of all the impacts and to do a feasibility study which will analyze a number of alternatives and technologies for cleaning the site up. And that document that they will produce is called a remedial investigation feasibility study, or for short, RIFS. And it's kind of, in a way, like the NEPA process. You know, you do a study determining, characterizing the site conditions, and then you develop alternatives for cleaning the site up. And this is what this document is called. So the company is paying for it. They have a consultant that works for them. They're now, it used to be Dames and Moore, they're now called URS. And that consultant is doing all their environmental work and will do the feasibility study for them. The Forest Service is the lead agency directing the work that Intalco and their consultants are doing. So we're overseeing their work. And we have hired a consultant to work for us, and they're Hart Krauser Company out of Seattle. And there are the other cooperating agencies, of course, the EPA and the Washington Department of Ecology. We're all cooperating on this with the Forest Service as the lead agency, and I'm the project manager. In conjunction with the remedial investigation and feasibility study, we're also doing a natural resource damage assessment, NRDA, in conjunction with this RIFS. And that's where we'll look at the impacts or injuries to all the natural resources at this site. And the company then is responsible for either restoring those resources, and if they can't restore them, then for compensating us for those impacts to the resources, natural resources. The Holden Mine cleanup project is the largest one in the Pacific Northwest region of the Forest Service. And it's the first one anywhere in the Forest Service that EPA has allowed the Forest Service to be the lead agency in one of these big cleanups. So it's we're setting new ground here. Also, a couple years ago, we reached an agreement with Intalco on the settlement of the recovery of past costs at this site. That's recovery of Forest Service past costs. At the time we began negotiations with Intalco, we had $6.2 million in past costs that we were trying to recover from them. Of course, a little over $3 million of that was the work we did in the late 1980s, early 1990s, putting the gravel and riprap on. We negotiated and recovered 3.1, about half of that amount. And that may not seem like good negotiation, but it really was. And we, in addition to getting the $3.1 million, we've also have obtained a release from any future liability at the site of the Forest Service, and the company has agreed in principle to do the remedy, whatever the remedy is. When we get to the, you know, we have an administrative order right now for them to do the study, but we have to negotiate another legal agreement with them to actually perform the remedy. So they've already agreed in principle that they're going to do it. But of course, that's subject to negotiation too. In addition to the $3.1 million, the PRP is paying for the Forest Service, EPA's, and Ecology's ongoing oversight costs. So it's not coming out of your tax dollars for me to be up here.
All right.
Since 1997, Intalco and their consultants have collected substantial environmental data characterizing the site and also assessing the injury to the natural resources. They've produced a couple of draft remedial investigation reports, and the agencies are currently undergoing we're still in the process of reviewing and discussing with Intalco that particular document. We hope by this fall we will reach agreement and have a final remedial investigation report. Some of the key findings of that draft RI is that there are seasonal exceedances of water quality criteria, copper, zinc, and cadmium in particular, at a number of places all the way from the mine down to just before the water enters Lake Chelan. There's been a reduction in benthic macroinvertebrate and fish populations within the area here through the mine site and maybe about a mile or so downstream. Tailings piles are still unstable or have the potential to be unstable. The maintenance yard up where the shop and other facilities are, and lagoon soils, which is a kind of a lagoon off to the right of the road that goes up to the shop, those soils all exceed MOTCA standards for metals. There's also nearshore contamination of some of the sediments at the Lucerne Bar for zinc, about 10 acres, and that particular area just slightly exceeds the Washington State freshwater criteria for zinc. The company will be doing some additional work out there to verify whether or not there really has been any impact to the aquatic life on those 10 acres. We're currently in the early stages of the feasibility study, and that will document the cleanup alternatives, document the evaluation of the cleanup alternatives, and any natural resource restoration options that we kind of add into the alternatives. As I mentioned to you earlier, the agencies and Intalco have recently reached agreement on at least the themes for the cleanup alternatives that will be analyzed in the feasibility study. We have 6 action alternatives and 1 no action. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a second. Before I do that, I wanted to kind of give you a real quick synopsis of what we did last year out here. Some of you were here and others may have just heard about it, but as part of beginning the feasibility study, we requested that Intalco re-enter the collapsed 1500 level main portal for purposes of assessing conditions within the mine workings that will help us evaluate some of the proposed technologies for managing and treating water. And our objective was to potentially locate sources of water that may not be contaminated in the mine, and maybe we can separate the flows of water and direct some water right out of the mine that may not need to be treated, or certain flows of water may not need as intensive treatment as other flows. Also, we were hoping we might be able to find some way to control water entering the mine. And then when we get to the point of treating the water, we're going to have some kind of treatment system to treat the water, to get the water, get the heavy metals out of the water and get it up to water quality standard. Almost any treatment system we use works best if you can have a steady flow of water into it. And, you know, you don't have big surges in the water flow. And if you've been around here in the spring when the snow melts and you have that spring flush down Railroad Creek, well, you're having the same thing happen in the mine, and you get a significant increase of flow in the spring, and then it gradually dwindles over the year, but you have flow out of there all year round. One of the options we're looking at is putting watertight bulkheads in on the 1500 level and allowing the water to raise up in the mine, and then that would give us, kind of use the mine as a reservoir and allow us to then withdraw the water at a steady rate throughout the year. And then the reservoir would draw down and then fill back up again. The other option is to, in that one cross section I showed you, everything below the 1500 level of the mine is flooded. The other option is to pump water out of the 1500 level or below the 1500 level and then allow that to fill up in the spring and then siphon it down through the rest of the year. So the idea is to use the mine as a reservoir. We just don't know if we're going to allow it to fill up or pump down yet. And so some of the information we were trying to gather by opening the mine relates to those sorts of issues. Anyway, I have a whole another presentation on just on the process of opening the mine, which took almost, took 3 months to do it, about twice as long. And this is just one example of all of the rocks. Once they started removing the old portal and started excavating through the cave debris, the first 90 feet of that portal is all through glacial till. That's what collapsed on the mine. Once you get back 90 feet, you're in solid rock. You can see the size of some of the boulders that had come down into the workings. Then once we got through the cave debris, we encountered the next big problem. And that was the 4.5 feet of slime and railroad ties. This is a, I call it slime, but it's really a, mostly a, an iron and aluminum-rich precipitate. As the water is flowing out of the mine and the pH changes, it drops out or precipitates the iron and some aluminum. And over the years since that mine had been caved, about 20 years, I think since it was last not caved, slime or precipitate has continually built up over the years. Also in the spring, of course the water floods and the water level in this caved area or behind the cave would rise, and essentially this whole tunnel would fill with water. And you can see the level that the slimes or the precipitates had come to. It's like a bath. You can see these lines, they're all related to like a, in a bathtub, you know, rings in a bathtub. Well, once we got through that cave debris and saw this in front of us, we weren't sure what to do next. And a couple of the miners here are trying to determine how much of this stuff we have. How far back in the mine does it go? So they started walking through this stuff. And they got just a little bit farther than here. They had to come back. This is really deceiving. It's about 4.5 feet deep. This guy right here looks like he's standing on the bottom, but he's not. This slime has so much buoyancy to it, he's actually not standing on the bottom. He's this guy right here is walking on some of these timbers. So that's why he's kind of up. What we have here is when you had these big flushes through the mine, we discovered that when the mine shut down, they salvaged the rail track but left the railroad ties. And over the years, as this mine flooded periodically and flushed, you had a series of log jams made up of railroad ties. And so these guys were walking on just a mess of railroad ties and slime, and it was just too dangerous to go any further, so they turned around and came back. Then we had to bring in the big equipment and clean that stuff out. This is just a picture back into the 1500 level when we were doing our sampling last fall. So as I say, I've got an hour presentation just on the opening of the mine that I'll be doing sometime next week. Now, back to the alternatives. As I say, we have one no action. You always have to have a no action alternative, and then six action alternatives that are kind of theme-based. And as I go over them, I'm going to be somewhat general, and I won't get into all the detail unless you ask some specific questions. But there may only be six action alternatives, but we have a number of sub-alternatives. And I won't go over all of those, but there's a variety of technologies that we may incorporate into one alternative, and then we'll look at the same alternative without that technology. So there's, in a way, there's more than six alternatives if you count sub-alternatives. And there are some things we're going to do in all of the alternatives. Okay, this is basically the no action alternative, and they state here institutional controls. So basically, in this case, what that amounts to is not doing much, but they'll be doing monitoring of the water quality, monitoring of the seeps, monitoring of the water coming out of the portal, and things like that. Basically just monitoring what's currently occurring. And the only things that would action items that would be part of this no action alternative is to put permanent bat gates in the two openings here that we've been investigating bats. There is some bat activity that we've observed in the 300 level and the 1100 level. We currently have temporary bat gates, locking bat gates, so people can't get in, but bats can get in and out. And as a part of this alternative, the only real action item is that we would make those bat gates more permanent than they are now. We would install a more permanent door on the 1500 level than what we have right now. The door there is really kind of a temporary door. It would be a more substantial door. We would also put a permanent bat gate on the ventilator portal. I didn't mention this before, but there is, in addition to the main haulage portal on the 1500 level, there was another one out here that was used solely for ventilation. They had big fans set up in there. So these are the only action items on alternative one, which is basically the no action alternative. Alternative two is, the theme is water management. And here, I need to remind you again that we have not reached agreement yet, total agreement with URS and Intalco as to what's going to be covered in each of these alternatives. This is more or less the way it's going to be, but not necessarily yet, because we haven't reached the final details. Anyway, what the company has proposed is for all of the portals, the various levels, the 300, the 550, the 700, the 800, 1100, and then there's the 1000 foot level. These would all be re-excavated, and they would put in airtight bulkheads in all of those openings to restrict airflow into the mine. And that is hoped that would help cut back on the amount of acid generation you have back in the mine, because with this massive sulfide deposit, with the water and the air and the sulfides, you end up producing a dilute sulfuric acid, which is also picking up the metals. So the idea behind that is to cut down the amount of air that sort of feeds that chemical reaction. On the 1500 main portal and 1500 ventilator portal, we would put in hydrostatic or watertight bulkheads, because assuming we're going to fill the mine up, so we'll need bulkheads in there that hold back the water. Also, they would put a trench that would intercept water coming down slope. This trench would be constructed up above the tailings piles, all around the tailings pile, and would divert water off to Rubber Creek here and off to Copper Creek there in this direction. This water doesn't need to be treated because it's not contaminated. It's above the mine site. The idea is to intercept that groundwater so it can't get into the tailings piles. They would also improve some of the drainage features on the top of tailings pile 2 and 3. In addition, there would be some sort of work on recontouring the slopes here, the toe of the tailings piles, so they're more stable. This is the area where the lagoon is, I've told you about. The soils are contaminated there. They would be removed, treated, and placed on top of one of the tailings piles. The soils in the maintenance yard area and in the mill building would either be removed and placed on the tailings pile, or we would put a concrete or asphalt camp on, which would be real nice for the village to have an asphalt or concrete road up there by your garage. We don't know yet. We're still not sure whether the entire mill building will be removed. The soils beneath the mill building are contaminated, but It's just kind of a sub-alternative to all the alternatives, is that we're either going to clean all the soils up in the area, take all the contaminated material out of the mill building, or we'll actually remove the mill building. And that's yet to be decided. The agencies do not believe this alternative will meet water quality standards or meet our regulatory requirements. But we agreed with the company to allow them to keep this alternative in the feasibility study. But we don't believe it will make the grade because it doesn't treat any of the water coming out of the mines. It's primarily focused on trying to manage the water that is coming out, reduce the amount of water coming out of the mine, and also reduce the contamination. Alternative three is water management and west area treatment. The west area portion of the mine is this primarily the waste dumps and the mine drainage, this area here. What they would do in this alternative, kind of an addition, each alternative is somewhat additive. They would have a water treatment system. And we haven't reached agreement yet as to what that system will consist of, whether it's going to be a regular chemical treatment plant or, as the company has proposed, a wetlands or a passive water treatment system would be a series of wetlands, aerobic and anaerobic wetlands that would be used to treat the water and remove the heavy metals, kind of in a natural process.
What are aerobic and anaerobic?
You're either dealing with oxygen or in a reducing environment. And between the two environments, you could remove different metals. If you had a reducing environment with pH, it's in a reducing mode, or in an oxidizing mode. And this has been tried at different mines, and there are some tests going on right now in various mines using that process. It may work here. The agencies have some concerns that it may not still get to the water quality standards, that some kind of chemical treatment plant is going to be needed. But again, that's going to be determined as we go through the feasibility study and then do some treatability tests and things like that. But anyway, this area right in here would be where we would locate these wetlands, and where the water coming out of the mine, they would also collect. There's a number of seeps that down the hill from all these workings that are coming out along the base of the hill here by railroad treatment. All that contaminated water would be collected and run into the treatment plant or the wetlands, and the seeps below the waste dumps would all be collected, and below the seeps coming out of the mill area, and all this contaminated water would be focused into that passive treatment area. Alternative four is, again, kind of additive, except in this case, we're not treating any of the water over here from the mine. We're just treating the water, the seeps, coming out from underneath the tailings piles. And in this case, we would have to relocate Railroad Creek right here, take that big bend out, and we would construct a wetlands area right in here, and then another wetlands area down below, down past tailings pile 3. There's already kind of a natural wetlands there to begin with. Then we would collect all the seeps and direct them into the wetlands, and collect the seeps here and focus it into the wetlands. There is a possibility that the passive water treatment idea may actually work on the seeps coming from the tailings piles, because there the biggest problem is iron and acidic water. It might work there, but we don't think it'll work where we have the heavy metals. And then is kind of a combination where we have still the water treatment, but we have treatment of the east and west water. Again, using a passive water treatment system. Alternative six is a little, again, a little more aggressive. It's still trying to do some water management. Here we're actually capping the tailings piles with some kind of impermeable cap. It could be a clay cap, it could be an asphalt cap, some kind of cap to impermeable so water cannot infiltrate down into the tailings piles. We also do the same thing on tailings on the waste dumps. And then everything else is basically the same. There is a sub-alternative, well actually there's a couple of sub-alternatives for six. And this one of the sub-alternatives is somewhat similar to seven, so I'm going to go on to the next alternative and I'll explain the differences. Okay, alternative seven. Well, let me go back. Alternative six is very similar here. What it would do is consolidate tailings piles one, or actually we would move tailings pile one and tailings pile two and place it into a new larger tailings pile on top of tailings pile two, and you'd have a consolidated tailings pile. And so you wouldn't have one here, and you wouldn't have a tailings pile down here. You'd still have water treatment with a passive system of the mine water and the water coming down below the dumps. Then you would still be treating, collecting and treating any water that came out from underneath the, from this new consolidated tailings pile in a passive treatment system. Now, for both alternative 6B and 7, depending on how large this consolidated pile gets and the size that's needed for this particular wetlands, we might need to move Railroad Creek again in this area slightly to get it to make enough room for this option. Okay, now alternative 7, now forget 6B. Alternative 7, again, looks a lot like 6B, except that we've also added the waste dumps to this big consolidated pile. And there is a kind of another sub-option that the agencies are looking at, and that's to bring the waste dumps from these other workings down and put them over here as well. Because there's a lot of sulfide-rich material in these waste dumps that is contaminating this avalanche chute. There's quite a bit of water that comes down through here and comes into contact with this debris, mineralized debris, and is causing some fairly severe metal red seeps down here. So this would be pretty expensive and kind of a hard effort, but that's something we're going to have the company look at, is also moving these waste dumps down. In addition to consolidating all of the material in one big pile, we would have a slurry wall constructed around this big pile that would block off any groundwater from entering from below up into the tailings pile. And if we did that, that would probably require the relocation of Railroad Creek in through here so we could have enough room to do that. So those are basically the alternatives as they exist currently. There would also, as a part of all the alternatives, we would again rip up all this ferrocrete that's in the Railroad Creek and try to restore the fisheries there. Okay, the current schedule, which changes every time I give one of these presentations. We're hoping to have a final remedial investigation report approved by the agencies this fall. If we're real lucky, we might have a draft feasibility study submitted to the agencies this winter, whether it's sometime this winter. We could have a final feasibility report by the fall of 2002. Once we have a final feasibility study, that's kind of where the company stops. They've agreed to do the remedial investigation and the feasibility study. They may actually have a preferred remedy in the feasibility study. However, once they complete that report, it's in the agency's hands. We then make the decision as to what remedy or what combination of all remedies will be selected. And we will issue a final proposed plan which will contain the agency's selected or the agency's proposed remedial action. And I want to emphasize that it could and would most likely be different from what the company will propose as their preferred remedy in the document. I don't know how different it'll be, but it's more likely we will add something. We could combine a couple alternatives together or take parts of several alternatives to build the alternative that the agencies will propose. That then goes out to the public in a formal notification process, and we'll have some formal public hearings on this proposed plan where we will take comments and actually have a court stenographer come in and we'll record the comments. Agencies will then go back and consider all the comments, including comments that we'll receive from Intalco and their consultant, and then come up with a record of decision, which will be our final decision. And, you know, it's possible we could have that record of decision sometime in the fall and winter of 2003. It could be later. It won't be any earlier, I just about guarantee you that. If the record of decision is, let's say the company strongly opposes what we come up with in the record of decision, then there will be a considerable amount of negotiations and maybe even legal action right here, because we will eventually have to come to agreement with the company as to what that remedy will be, and they will then enter into a consent decree, which is a formal document filed with the court. Then we'll go into remedial design. And we've had the feasibility study, but we still don't have the final design. The final engineering design and drawings will then be done after we've reached the consent decree. And again, some of this the company may already have done, you know, during this negotiation phase. But if we stay on this track, the remedial design will be in the spring of 2004. We could begin construction in the 2004. Depending upon the aggressiveness of the remedy, it could take from 2 to 3 construction seasons. What I'm going to go into now is kind of some of the pictures of the underground working. So if anyone has any questions on the first part of this presentation, maybe before you lose the question in your mind, I can you can throw some of them out. I'll try to answer them. Yes?
Yeah. Why is there no public comment period during your evaluation of the alternatives?
We will release our document. The final remedial investigation study will go out to the public. The RI will go out to the public. And the public will have access to the feasibility study as well. We don't have formal public meetings. We have news releases. The documents are available for the public to review at any time. And we will be doing that key points in the process. We do have public meetings. They're not formal public meetings.
But do you accept public comments?
Yes.
And all that time?
Yes.
So it's considered reflected in the final proposed plan?
Yes. But it's not a formal process like it is once we have the proposed plan. Uh-huh. And, you know, forums like I'm doing here and I do for other agencies or groups are one way of getting the information out. But we do have, matter of fact, all the key documents are, the Holden Village is a repository for the documents, so the draft RI and the draft final RI are right in the resource room up on the top shelf, and they will be getting all the documents, and so this is one place you could view them at. The supervisor's office in Wenatchee is another place, and the Washington Department of Ecology's office is another location where all the documents are available. I saw a hand over there. I can't see who it is, but
okay.
You were saying that the agencies didn't believe that the passive water treatment at the mine was going to be sufficient because of heavy metals?
That's correct.
And it doesn't appear that any of the alternatives include anything other than passive treatment. How does that help?
Right, and that's because that's what the company has proposed, and we're still negotiating with them as to what the description of these alternatives are going to be. I would prefer saying some kind of water treatment system, which could include just passive, or it could include a combination of a water treatment plant and passive treatment.
Eventually be explored by the company?
Yes, it will be. I mean, we don't believe that the passive process by itself will be sufficient, and we will want them to document and prove to us that it will work if they're not going to implement a chemical treatment. One of the problems with anything working up here at Holden, I should have mentioned this, is the lack of power in the wintertime. And if we were to need a water treatment plant, it would require electricity. And there is no surplus electricity in the wintertime. And there would have to be some other source. And that could become very expensive. And that's one of the things the company's really looking at. They would like to, and I think the agencies would kind of like to see some, the passive treatment work, but our technical experts don't believe it will, unless they can demonstrate to us that it will work. If we do have a chemical plant, we may need to have a diesel generator up here to run the plant. Or there's a possibility that we might be able to tap into the hydropower and somehow expand the capacity of the current system, or construct another system somewhere here locally to provide enough power for the chemical plant, which might be a bonus for Holden Village in the wintertime. Did I answer?
Yes, you did.
Is there any question about the Intalco's financial ability to carry out the remedial plans?
No. And actually, Intalco is owned by Alcoa and a French company called Pechenet. So there's sufficient funds there to implement the remedy. However, I should add that one of the criteria that's used in evaluating the alternatives in the feasibility study is cost, in cost effectiveness. How effective is the process? And if you have a system that would remove 95% of the contamination and cost $100 million, and have another process that would remove 85% and only cost $50 million, there might be some trade-offs that would have to be made, and cost is a consideration that would come into that evaluation process. So they may have deep pockets, but that doesn't mean that we will select the most costly alternative that's 100% assurance of cleaning the site up.
Uh-huh. How severe is the metal loading in the creek? Is it unsafe to be in the water?
There is no human health risk due to the metals, nor is there for most of the wildlife, but there is a risk to aquatic life and fish. Matter of fact, you'll see deer drinking the water coming out of the mine.
I saw deer eating out of the bottom of the abandoned tailings
pond. Yeah, that's probably a salt county salt.
No.
Okay.
No.
Yes.
I understand that one of the criteria is the impact to Holden Village itself.
That's right.
Us. And so maybe you could say a little bit more about that criteria in terms of the determinants of impact to us and how they're weighted.
It's kind of hard to say at this point in time how significant the impacts might be. we know we can pretty well say that there will be certainly some temporary disruptions of some of the facilities here at Holden due to that when they start constructing the remedy. If I could figure out how to back up here. Let's go to this one. To put this trench in up here, we're going to have to cut both the hydro and the water supply to Holden Village. It would be for a temporary period, but just the same, it would be a period of time when we would, you know, it would be disrupted. You could probably, there's probably some workarounds you can do, but just the same, there's going to be some impact there. Also, whatever we do down in this area is going to have an impact. Again, your water line and your hydro line, both, well, the water line goes right down through the center of the mill building, and your hydro line comes along the side. So again, when activity is occurring in cleaning up the material in the mill building or removing the mill building, there's going to be certainly disruptions to both of those water lines at that time. There's going to, when the mill building, if the mill building is removed, or even if there's work done to remove the contaminated materials around here, there's going to be a lot of heavy equipment operating in this area, and it certainly will probably make it difficult to even use your shop and use this area to park and store your vehicles. So there'll be need to be another location somewhere to do that. And I know we've already started some discussions with Holden Village about trying to find locations, temporary locations for these facilities. So the Forest Service has also started doing some of its biological surveys and cultural survey of areas where we might relocate some of these facilities to temporarily. I don't know where a treatment, if we went with a treatment, chemical treatment plant, I'm not sure where it would be, but close to the mine site is probably a good location. Whether we would use some of the buildings already up here or construct a new building is hard to say, and I really can't address that too much. It depends on the size of the plant and things like that. If we just go with the passive water treatment of the wetlands environment, a large area down in here is going to be impacted, maybe even all the way up and including the area where you have your firewood stored. There's just going to be a lot of heavy equipment operating over in here, no matter what is going on. You know, I can just about guarantee that that alternative two, which is a pretty minimal alternative, will not be selected. It's going to be something on the scale of at least this, maybe not consolidation of the piles, but certainly something that's going to involve all of these treatment options. Let's see. I think the activity up in this area right here is going to be the most impacting on Holden Village. I assume that whenever we do work down in this area of the site, we can probably do like we did when we did the interim action and have an access bridge across River Creek down here, and all the heavy equipment could access this area from here and not go through the village. Again, if we need to end up relocating parts of Railroad Creek, that will certainly mean a lot of heavy equipment and noise, and it will have a disruption on your guests and certainly the school.
Would the village be compensated for that?
That's something between the village and Intalpa. I would think yes, but again, that would be something that would need to be negotiated with Intalpa.
So that's not something that you're concerned about particularly?
I'm concerned about it, but it's not something that I would, the agencies would be, we might be a party to see what's going on, but we wouldn't be providing for that. That would be an agreement between Holden Village and Intalpa.
You know, I'm before you answer the next question, can I ask you to throw on the lights just for a minute? Because I'm the village photographer and I'd love to get a picture of this crew.
Oh. Can someone turn the lights on?
Sorry, but I need to get a lesson.
Nora,
if you have any more questions to answer, maybe you could stand right there and answer them.
Oh, me? Me? Are there any more questions?
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. If you cap those things like that,
Could you still grow stuff on top of it?
Well, we would like to see, if we end up capping it, we would like to see an impermeable cap, probably out of clay, and then you can put soil and vegetation, another layer of soil and vegetation on top of that. But that gets pretty expensive. I mean, really, it's a shame, no matter what we do, we have to do some recontouring here. It's a shame we'll have to disturb all that the growth we've gotten up there over the last 10 years. But we have learned that we can grow trees and shrubs and stuff on the tailings pile. Once we put that gravel up there, it worked. And it in the summertime, you know, it became like a desert up there, and plants couldn't survive. But the gravel allows moisture to stay there longer, and we've gotten good growth right on top of the tailings pile. So we know we can do it, and if we go to something like this, we would prefer that some kind of medium for growing vegetation is placed on top of that cap. The only problem is when you do something like that, then once you start getting trees growing on it and they start sinking their roots down, then you have a possibility of disrupting the cap. Any more questions about this part before we launch into seeing some pictures of the dirty mine?
Thank you.
Lights? Lights? Or did you want them? Who needed them off? Can I turn them off now? Or?
Yeah, sure.
Actually, this thing is bright enough, we can probably keep some of the lights on.
Let's keep some of the lights on so I don't fall asleep.
Okay. All right, there we go. Okay. As I mentioned to you earlier, we opened up the 1500 level to gain access into the mine. And so what I'm gonna, next series of pictures will be pictures we took inside the 1500 level, and then also the 300 level, which I mentioned is currently open, although we have put a gate across it, locking gate across it now that allows bats to come in, but not people. And then the same thing with the 1100 level right down here. We have a bat gate there, and it's open. So as part of our investigations last year, in conjunction with getting into the 1500 level, we went into the 300 and 1100 and sampled those levels, water we found in there, and also took notes on what we found as to the source of water, if we could find out where the water is coming from, things like that. So those are the three levels we're going to look at. And this is a cross-section of the mine, and I just wanted to show it to you. This is the 1500 level right here where all the ore came out. And these lines, horizontal lines, are the operating levels in the mine, both above and below. And all of the levels and workings below the 1500 level in this area are all flooded, and the water is coming out the portal. These are these large stopes where they removed all this rock. You know, there's a large rooms, like in large caverns. They're 70 to 100 feet wide by 300-400 feet high and maybe 500 feet long.
Wow.
Huge rooms inside that mine, and they come within 30 feet of the surface up here in places. Anyway, during the latter years of the mine, they put about 1.5 million tons of tailings back into the mine. And that's what these black, these are the stopes that they filled with the tailings. This is a 300 level up here, and you can see there is a connection downward into the top of this huge stope that goes down to, what is that level? I can't, 800 level or
1,000?
No, there's 1,100 right here.
No, 800.
800 level. So it, from 800 up to almost the 300 level, so that's about 500 feet room. Anyway,
Why don't you fill those up with the tailings?
Well, that's something that was early on talked about as a possible technology, is to put the tailings back in the mine. Well, one thing, even if this area wasn't all flooded, you can't get all the tailings back in because of expansion. So you could only maybe get a half to two-thirds back in the mine if you can get access to every part of the mine. And you'd have to re-liquefy the tailings and pump them in. I mean, it could be done, but you wouldn't get rid of all of them, and it would be awfully expensive. It would be more expensive to put in a chemical treatment plant. Okay, then we also went here on the 1100 level, and I'll show you some of the stopes. You notice they backfilled some of these stopes right up to the 1500 level. Okay, this is a mine map, if you haven't seen one before, of the 300 level. Right here is the portal, this is where you come in. And this just shows the workings. There aren't a lot of workings. It's pretty small opening. This probably, you only go back about 300-400 feet to about here. The most interesting feature in here is this right here. It's called a winze, and it's like a shaft. It's declined at about 70 degrees down, and that's what goes in that previous cross section. Mm-hmm. That's what connects the 300 level to the top of that stope. So if you were to fall down that winze, you would have a fun ride for the first 500 feet. And then, okay, this is the opening, currently what it looks like to the 300 level. And this is just one shot back. This was an old air door that's just so rotten. When I tried to open it, it just all fell down. And you might notice that Holden Village has put these signs up here warning its guests and visitors not to enter the mine for obvious safety reasons. The 1500 level main and 1500 level ventilator portals are on the National Forest System lands. All the other portals are on patented mining claims that are private property owned in part by Holden Village. So that's why Holden Village is really concerned about the safety up here, and also why we put blocking bat gates in. But we'll show you some pictures later on, but there have been people from Holden Village, believe it or not, that have gone into these workings, and if they had been caught, they would have been asked to leave the village. But we have now a record of who those people are. So if any of you are guilty, here's the winze in there. You can see that you can walk by it, but it just takes a sharp dive off to the right. This is looking down that winze. You notice all the coloration on the walls of this opening is due to just over the years of exposure to air and humidity, and it's oxidized these sulfides and produced a lot of iron and coatings on the walls of the mine. This was one of the earliest of the workings developed by Holden in the early 1900s. And if you don't believe me, here's a picture taken in sometime around the turn of the century of them working on the 300 level. And right here, this is the what they're using when they're working on that winze to drive it down. The bucket here, they take that down on cable and then load it up with the rock. They and then haul it up to the surface here, load it in this ore car, and take it out to the waste dump. All hand mining techniques. They didn't, in these early days, they weren't using the nice percussion air drills. They were using hand still, you know, with the old sledgehammer and still. Wow. Here's a couple more shots on the 300 level. This is a concrete bulkhead, and there's water on the other side of this bulkhead. This particular crosscut goes back a ways, and we are pretty sure they were using this to dam up water to use in their drilling. When they started using percussion air drills, they also had water in them, and
We think this is a reservoir for water for that purpose. And you see a lot of these iron stalactites in here. Okay, this is the mine map now of the 1100 level, and I want to point out that this isn't an exact representation. There's another little part of this that didn't get put on this map. The portal really sits right over in here. And this goes back, it's about 2,000 feet back to the number one shaft. We couldn't get any further than right here for safety reasons. And there are other parts of this we didn't go into either for safety reasons. It's hard to see on this picture, but right here there are actually parallel drifts. They're parallel to one another, and every one of these drifts they were using as a place where they would slush the ore or drag the ore that came out of these stopes above, and then drag it through by a slusher, and I'll show you what a slusher is in a second, into a winze that would drop it down. And eventually this dropped all the way down to the 1500 level where it was taken out. Okay, this is the opening to the 1100 level, and then once you crawl through that hole, you gotta crawl through this hole in the door. And you can see we've got some metal bars that are locking, so you can't get in there now. But this is the access to this level. You also see these lines here? Those are watermark, high water level. In the spring when the snow melts, because you have this collapsed area out in front of the portal, it fills up with water up to this point right here. So you got about 3.5-4 feet of water here. When we were out here this spring sampling in the 1100 level, the water level was right at the edge of the door. So we had to crawl through that hole and then drop into 3.5 feet of water that wasn't much above freezing. And it was, it was a real shock, believe me. But I mean, I make light of it a little bit, but there are some real safety concerns, even for us that are going in there with the proper equipment and a lot of experience. And there's been a lot of people that have gone into these openings over the years with nothing but flashlights, candles, and not the proper safety equipment or anything. And we're lucky that we haven't lost any of them. Here's a couple more views in the 1100 level. Very competent rock. Stays, it's been like that for darn near almost, 100 years. So, I mean, these were originally driven at the turn of the century. This white stuff on the floor, you know, this is in the area where it floods, and that's a precipitate that comes out of the water, and it's an aluminum-rich precipitate. Another view, this is back in one of the crosscuts, and instead of, you can see where they've hand-stacked rocks, and this is waste rock. It was not ore quality. And they didn't want to take it all the way out and dump it on the waste dump, so they stacked it in one of these crosscuts that they weren't going to use anymore. This right here is kind of hard to see, but it's a collar for a winze that goes down to the 1500 level. And there's a grizzly there, and there were some iron bars they could use as a grizzly, and they would drag the ore using the slusher up to this point, and then it would drag and fall down through the winze to the 1500 level. This is one of these slushers, and this is used to almost like a blade on a road grader or patrol, and they have a cable attached to it and a drum system that they could drag this thing toward them, and it would drag the ore toward the piece of equipment, and then the ore would go down the winze. And then the other cable would take it back, and they would continually use that to slush ore. This is a pretty big one. I've never seen one this big before, but it's about five feet across here. Right here is one of these ore chutes. You see the circle there? They would develop a number of these ore passageways
from this level up into the stope. And as they blasted ore, the ore would be broken by their explosives and then fall down through these passageways or chutes down to the 1100 level. And then they would use this slusher to scrape it to the winds and it would go the rest of the way down to the 1500 level. Right here is a boulder that is blocking that particular ore chute. And that's about the size of a truck. And all of this blue and green coloration are copper sulfates, the secondary copper product from the water that's flowing through the stokes where there is still broken ore. Okay, this is a picture of a slusher in use. Right here is that gadget being drugged toward the winds, and it just drags the ore, and then this cable takes it back, and it's pulled toward them again. And this is the drum that they use. This is a better picture of the drum where this cable is run on, and it's run on compressed air. Here's another view in the 1100 levels junction point for two drifts. This particular rail car, kind of interesting, but we came into the mine, had been sitting in this puddle of water, and I figured it was probably frozen, yeah. You know, right to the rail. Yeah. And it rolled just like it was new almost.
Okay, really.
And I've got these pictures on the internet, and one of the Holden guests over the years that was into this mine has responded to me, sent me a couple email messages with all the pictures, and gave me a little intelligence on this car. But this, apparently the 1100 level has been flooded for years, but when they were going into the mine back in the 70s, without permission, they were using this car to get back and forth through this pit area with people that didn't have boots. So that's why it still works. This is an old powder magazine on the 1100 level. The timbers are just rotten and all the powder is gone, but we found some manifest in there, paper manifest that were still legible as to what percent of explosives they were using. This is one of the raises. They would bring ore down through here and load it onto ore cars. It's kind of a hopper where they would open it up and load it. Here's a ladder going up, and this is a skip where they would probably haul tools and other supplies up and down this raise. This is an old diamond drill hole, and the iron is just coming out, probably like a siderite or something like that, just forming kind of a neat structure on the wall. Here's another portion of the 1100 level where we have more of that waste rock stacked up, and it's getting to be unsafe. We did not go any further than this place. This is kind of I'm not sure if that's the same place or not, but it looked like it. Back when the mine was actually in production. And anyway, it's a picture of in the days when the mine was operating and how they would stack this waste up inside passageways in the mine that they didn't need anymore, instead of hauling it all the way out to the surface. Here's looking into one of these huge stopes up in the 1100 level. This goes down, and you'd throw a rock off, but it would be at least 5 seconds before it hit anything. And it looks like we're about up at the top of it, though. This right here is a continuation of this crosscut. Before this stope was completed, this went through solid rock to that point. And in the process of finishing up the stope and removing all the ore in between these two places was removed. This is a picture taken during the mining days, probably of this same exact place. Here's the opening into the stope, and here's a picture looking across to that other opening with a miner standing in it. Here's the number one shaft on the 1100 level. This is the shaft itself, and this is the manway, which would be located right in here. The timbers at this particular location were in pretty good shape, but you notice the green color. That's because they've been preserved with copper. Everything is coated with green in here. Also, there is a good documented list of names of people that have been into the Holden Mine. And there's several of these placards scattered around here with people that have made a trip into the Holden Mine. They knew it was illegal at the time, and illegal from the standpoint they could have been removed from the village, but nevertheless, they did it, and this one particular list here actually has every level that they were on. They would use these ladders to go up and down between levels. They're just lucky. I've heard some stories where they were climbing up and down these ladders and some of the rungs broke. I mean, over the years, these things have rotted out, and it was extremely dangerous to even attempt that now. Here's a current view of looking down the number one shaft, and you can see there's water flowing down there just like it's raining. And here's a view looking down the same shaft. I'm not sure if it's taken from the 1100 level, but it's the same number one shaft looking down during the years when the mine was in production. Okay, now we're going to go to the 1500 level, and this picture is a little washed out, but here, to get back to the ore zone, you have to go back almost 1800 feet even to get back to the ore zone. And I'll show you some pictures of the number one shaft and some of the views in through here. I'll show you a view looking into this stope at the bottom. I'll show you some pictures from the number two shaft, what it looks like today. And then a picture about right in here, which is as far as we are able to go. Right here was as far as we were able to go. We couldn't go any further into the rest of the mine this way. And we couldn't go into any of the rest of the mine this way. It was just too unsafe because of rotten down timber and where rocks had started slabbing off of the wall. Interestingly, this is what the portal looked like last winter. It looks the same now, except no snow. And that's what it looked like when the mine was in production, kind of a winter view of the 1500 level portal. Today, to get into the 1500 level, it's a little bit of a challenge because when we finished up our work last year, we were not able to remove all of the slime, that 4.5 feet of slime out of the mine because we filled up the settling pond. And so we had to put in some emergency bulkheads to dam up the water and keeping the slime from coming out. So we have two bulkheads in there that are damming up water. We discovered that once you dam up the water or create a pond, stop the flow, the precipitate settles out very quickly and you get clarified water. I mean, it still has minerals in it, but it's at least clear. So the first bulkhead here is about 3 feet, 3.5 feet high, and it's just past where you come out of the glacial material and get into the hard rock, where I took that one picture of the guys tromping through the slime. And so there's water about 3 feet high here, and you gotta get in a boat. Now we've got boats inside the portal with life vests and the whole shooting match, and you scale up the tunnel now from the first bulkhead to the second bulkhead, which is 5 feet high. It's got water backed up another 1,000 feet behind it, 5 feet deep. So you gotta lift the boats up over that bulkhead and go the rest of the way until the water, so the tunnel slopes outward at a grade so that the water would naturally